Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
A judge orders Pistorius to undergo a psychiatric evaluation, and Nigerian villagers repel a Boko Haram attack. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. A South African judge has ordered runner Oscar Pistorius to undergo psychiatric tests, bringing a stop to his trial on charges that he murdered his girlfriend at his home last year. The judge announced her ruling today following testimony this week from a defense witness who said Pistorius had an anxiety disorder that causes fear and worry.
The effect of the evidence is that a doubt has been created that the accused may possibly have another defense relating to his criminal responsibility. There is also a possibility that there may be diminished criminal responsibility.
Prosecutor Jerry Nell requested the test. He says he does not want Pistorius to use such a condition as a basis for a possible appeal later on. Villagers in northern Nigeria fought off an attack by suspected Boko Haram militants and killed scores of the group's fighters. Witnesses and officials say the residents of the Calabash area in Borno State received advance warning of the attack. Nigeria's Daily Trust newspaper quotes a state legislator as saying that about 200 militants were killed. He said the villagers also captured some of the attackers. Vigilante groups have formed across northern Nigeria to combat Boko Haram. A new report says a total of 33.3 million people around the globe were internally displaced by conflict and violence as of December. That number includes 8.2 million driven from their homes during 2013 alone. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report by the Norwegian Refugee Council notes about two-thirds of the 33.3 million internally displaced people are in just five countries: Syria, Colombia, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Sudan. The Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, says that number includes nearly 500,000 driven from their homes during 2013. Egeland says he fears the number of people fleeing their homes will continue to escalate. He says nations must work more closely together to end this misery for millions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
More than 230 people have been confirmed dead in a mine collapse in southwest Turkey. Hundreds more are believed to be trapped deep inside the mine. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
In the southwestern town of Somma, relatives and friends are continuing to wait for news outside the disaster-stricken mine. But hope is fading for the up to 200 trapped miners. At the mine, Turkish Energy Minister Taner Yildiz says rescue efforts are being hampered by high levels of carbon monoxide, which has caused those efforts to be repeatedly suspended. Oxygen is continuing to be pumped into the mine, which is more than a kilometre deep. Most of the deaths are believed to be caused by suffocation. One miner involved in the rescue efforts says there is little hope of finding any more survivors. Relatives have voiced anger over the lack of information. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul, Turkey.
Vietnamese protesters have torched and looted several Chinese factories as anger spills over at Beijing's decision to put an oil rig in disputed waters off Vietnam's coast. The unrest began on Tuesday in southern Binh Duong province, where thousands of workers walked out of their jobs and took part in mass anti-China rallies. Video posted on social media showed large number of Vietnamese in work uniforms in front of factories with Chinese names, waving national flags and honking their motorbike horns. Officials in the Vietnam Singapore Industrial Park say at least three Chinese-owned factories were set ablaze and looted. Many factories in the area remain closed today as riot police tried to regain control. A newly discovered collection of 33 letters from U.S. First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy wrote to an Irish priest a half century ago are giving new insight into the deepest thoughts of one of the most private people in American public life. The letters cover the years from 1950 to 1964. She had correspondence with Father Joseph Leonard, a priest living in Dublin that she knew. The letters were found in a drawer at the Dublin's All Hallows College and are sold next month at auction. This is VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehisu Heben. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Nigerian activists say the kidnapping of more than 300 schoolgirls in the north a month ago was no isolated incident. The abduction of women and girls in Nigeria is a much larger problem, they say, and kidnappers are almost never punished.
That's VOA's Heather Murdoch reporting from Abuja. Details next.
Also in the news, in Nigeria's Borno State, vigilantes successfully defended a small town from a Boko Haram attack yesterday. And UNICEF's representative to the Central African Republic says children have fallen victim to malnutrition and recruitment as child soldiers.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
In Nigeria's Borno State, vigilantes successfully defended a small town in Kalabage administrative district from a Boko Haram attack yesterday. The vigilantes are part of a growing movement in northern Nigeria where the Nigerian army and police have failed to stop Boko Haram attacks on towns, villages, and schools. Locally, the Home Guards are known as Civilian Joint Task Forces. Yesterday, members of the Kalabage Joint Task Force attacked armed insurgents who were preparing to attack in two pickup trucks. Security officials said the vigilantes, armed with rocks, clubs, and bows and arrows, killed an undetermined number of insurgents and turned 10 others over to army authorities. Kalabage is about 155 miles north of Maiduguri, the capital of Borno State. Many such civilian groups often offer support at military checkpoints to identify suspected Boko Haram militants.
Nigerian activists say the kidnapping of more than 300 schoolgirls in the north a month ago was not an isolated incident. The abduction of women and girls in Nigeria is a much larger problem, they say, and kidnappers are almost never punished. Heather Murdoch reports from Abuja.
A protest of a couple of hundred people in the Nigerian capital on Tuesday got heated after Borno State Governor Kashim Shettima spoke. A month after the girls were kidnapped from Borno, Islamist militants known as Boko Haram are holding more than 250 in a forest hideout. Shettima explained part of the reason the girls are still missing.
In an insurgency operation like we are currently undergoing, it's the terrorists that are setting the pace of the war. There are people who know the terrain very well. They are the ones who are setting the agenda. So naturally, they tend to have the upper hand.
He says the abduction of the girls from Chibok town last month was not the first time Boko Haram has attempted to kidnap large groups of children from their schools. It was just the first time they were not stopped. Borno residents say Boko Haram has long been kidnapping women and girls and forcing them to be their so-called wives. The group says it wants to install its harsh version of Islamic law in Nigeria. But some analysts say its operations appear to be geared more towards wanton destruction than imposing an ideology. Outside the governor's office, some activists say the kidnapping is part of a larger problem in Nigeria, where the abduction of women and girls goes largely unpunished. Actress Dorothy Njamanzi narrowly escaped abduction in Abuja 2 years ago after she was beaten and molested.
Now we're here talking about another spate of abductions because other spates of abductions were not spoken against. They were encouraged by the government silence, and now we have yet another dimension to abductions. Honestly, my heart is broken.
Kidnapping is also on the rise again in the Niger Delta, an oil-rich region in the south, where militants have risen up against oil companies and the government several times, says lawyer Phyllis Obasahang. In his office in Wari, a rundown oil city, Obasahan says kidnapped victims in the Niger Delta tend to be adults taken for ransom. But he says the problem continues for much the same reason as in the north. Even when the kidnappers are caught and arrested, they are hardly ever convicted, he says.
Yeah, a few ones on trial, but for conviction, there has not been really a strong one.
Other activists demanding the rescue of the girls agree, but they say at this point they're not concerned with what happens after the girls are freed. Media coordinator Rotimi Olaole is with the Bring Back Our Girls campaign, a loose coalition of activist groups organizing rallies online and on the streets, demanding the safe return of the girls.
What we want the most is that our girls come out alive, and after that we're ready to work and support government to ensure that this do not happen again, and that abductions are reduced to the barest minimum.
Boko Haram released a video this week that included more than 100 kidnapped girls wearing Muslim headscarves. The man who claims to lead Boko Haram, Abubakar Shekau, says in a separate scene in the video, he converted the girls to Islam and is willing to trade them for the return of some of his imprisoned members. On Wednesday, the government reiterated that it will explore all options for the release and safe return of the girls. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
A new report finds a record 33.3 million people were internally displaced by conflict and violence in 2013, a staggering increase of 4.5 million from the previous year. The report by the Norwegian Refugee Council notes sub-Saharan Africa has the largest total number of IDPs, followed by the Middle East and North Africa. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The report by the Norwegian Refugee Council notes about two-thirds of the 33.3 million internally displaced people are in just five countries: Syria, Colombia, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Sudan. This is the first time Nigeria is included in these global statistics, and the report documents 3.3 million Nigerians displaced within their own country. The Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, says that number includes nearly 500,000 driven from their homes during 2013.
Of the 470,000 displaced in Nigeria last year, about 300,000 were displaced due to Boko Haram, the conflict between Boko Haram and counter-insurgency forces, and violence from Boko Haram. 170,000 displaced by intercommunal strife in Nigeria. 470,000 altogether.
The report says Syria has the highest total of IDPs, 6.5 million. Egeland calls Syria the epicenter of violent forced displacement. Every day, 9,500 people, about one family every 60 seconds, is being displaced in Syria. Egeland cites the Central African Republic as another exploding crisis, with nearly 1 million people newly displaced. He also points to South Sudan, where 380,000 people became displaced in 2013, and the total now has reached 1 million. Egeland says people who are displaced in their own countries are in a state of absolute crisis. Because they have not crossed the border, they are not entitled to the same international protections afforded refugees. He says they are unprotected, extremely vulnerable, and very often lack assistance. He says the figures in the report are the worst since the international community began recording internally displaced figures in 1989.
It is worse than the bleakest and blackest hours of the 1990s, with the genocides in Bosnia, elsewhere on the Balkans, and in Rwanda and in the Congo. At that time, it peaked around 28 million. Then we have had a decrease. We're now talking 1995, 96. Since 2000, there has been a relentless increase in the number of internally displaced. But the last 2 years have been by far the worst.
Egeland says he fears the number of people fleeing their homes will continue to escalate. He says nations must work more closely together to end this misery for millions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
A I'm Yehi Suhib. 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In Nigeria's Borno State, vigilantes successfully defended a small town from a Boko Haram attack yesterday. And a new report finds a record 33.3 million people were internally displaced by conflict and violence in 2013. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237.
UNICEF's representative to the Central African Republic says children have fallen victim to malnutrition and recruitment as child soldiers. He warns the conflict has growing regional implications. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Suleiman Diabate was in New York this week briefing UN officials about the ongoing crisis. He says all of the country's health and social services have collapsed.
The situation in Central African Republic is not good at all. It is a fragile country, and the security situation is volatile and unpredictable. So working in this environment is kind of complicated.
A complicated situation grew even worse last December when Christian militias formed to combat attacks by mostly Muslim Seleka rebels. The intercommunal violence has left many civilians dead or maimed. Much of the country's Muslim population has been displaced from the capital, Bangui. About 6,000 African and French peacekeepers are trying to maintain a semblance of order in a country too big for their numbers. The UN has authorized a mission to the country, MINUSCA, consisting of 10,000 military and 1,800 police personnel. But it'll be months before they arrive.
We all know that the peacekeeping mission will be deployed in mid-September, but we all know that the mission won't be fully operational in September. So between now and September, there is a kind of vacuum that needs to be addressed.
Diabate says in the meantime, the current troops on the ground need to be better organized and better equipped. He says unless the world pays attention to CAR, neighboring countries, such as Chad, Cameroon, DRC, and South Sudan, could face long-term negative effects, including refugees and spillover fighting.
We hear more about Syria, we hear more about Philippines or Ukraine, but CAR is not getting enough resources to address the issue of the children in Central African Republic.
Schools in the country have been closed for more than a year.
Children are not going to school, so they are being recruited by the rebels, by the militia groups. Children are being recruited by force, or sometimes they are joining because for them it is the only way to find food. It is the only way to find a way to take care of themselves.
The UN agency has managed to get some of the child soldiers released. It set a goal of freeing 1,500 child soldiers this year. Last year, UNICEF vaccinated 400,000 children in CAR against measles, yellow fever, and polio. The target is to immunize more than 700,000 children against measles in 2014.
We have also the case of malnourished children. We have a lot of malnourished children due to the crisis, because when the crisis happened, families were living in the bush. In the pediatric hospital of Bangui, the sole pediatric hospital we have for the entire country, the number of malnourished children has tripled.
Diabate says UNICEF has increased the number of personnel in the country from 70 to 200. They have access, he says, to most of the country except the far north.
Central African Republic is a donor orphan country. We have launched the humanitarian action for children for $81 million U.S. dollar, but we have mobilized only 20%. So there is a gap which needs to be filled up.
Diabate says in briefing U.N. officials about the crisis, he is echoing the voices of the children of CAR. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Joe. Well, the International Organization for Migration, IOM, has just completed a significant relief effort to internally displaced persons, IDPs, in Northern Central African Republic. It has distributed an estimated 13.7 tons of food to some 1,400 new arrivals in Cabo and Moyancito. The distribution focused on the recently relocated PK-12 community. It's a Muslim and minority population that had come under attack in the capital, Bangui, and decided to relocate to northern CAR. Included in the assistance package was a one-month emergency supply of rice, beans, oil, salt, and Super Cereal Plus. The IOM will arrange another food distribution in the coming weeks. Sandra Black is the communications officer for the IOM in Bangui. She spoke with me about when the distribution started, as well as the present humanitarian conditions in the CAR.
The food distribution took place in Cabo Thursday and then continued on in Moyancito on the CAR-Chad border over the weekend, Saturday, Sunday.
And what is the security situation like at this time?
The security situation continues to be unstable in Central African Republic. The population that we're feeding, the recently relocated population, is from PK-12. The neighborhood in northern Bangui, it's a community of Muslims and ethnic minorities who are being attacked. They're surrounded by anti-Balaka militia. So the UN humanitarian coordinator made a decision that this population needed to be moved north. The population was given a choice of where they wanted to go. Two of the locations were Cabo and Moyancito. So humanitarian community provided transportation for them to be on the border near Chad, where they feel safer.
These two communities are mixed communities with Muslims and Christians. So how was the convoy received by the communities?
The communities very warmly received the convoy. The mayor in Cabo did a lot of sensitization with the community. So in the church, in the mosque, they were told that this community was coming and they were very excited to receive them. Many people from PK-12 were being reunited with their families in Cabo and Moyancito. So there were people there to greet them and hug them upon arrival. The humanitarian community has been working hard to prepare the site for the PK-12 people who were relocated. So there were tents built and food was provided in this distribution a few days after their arrival.
What will the long-term situation be regarding housing for the IDPs?
Humanitarian organizations will continue to assist this population. Right now they're in tents, but infrastructure assistance will be provided for them to make this their home if they choose to. The mayor of Cabo decided that the site should be named, given a name of the neighborhood, so it would be part of Cabo. It's not just the displacement site. It's somewhere that these people can make their home.
I also understand the mayor of Cabo offered to the IDPs that they would be able to farm. Is that correct?
That's true. The mayor offered more than 80 plots to PK-12 community members to warmly welcome them and give them a chance to build their livelihoods agriculturally in Cabo.
At this point, how many IDPs are there total in CAR?
There are more than 500,000 IDPs in CAR. It's a number that often fluctuates. In Bangui, the number has gone down. We had more than 500,000 at the end of December. And in Bangui, the capital, that has gone down to less than 150,000. But around the country, there's still more than 500,000 and estimated more than 1 million who have already fled the country.
That was Sandra Black, a communications officer for the International Organization for Migration. She spoke with me from Bangui.
In yet another dramatic twist in the Oscar Pistorius murder trial, the judge granted a request the athlete be committed to a psychiatric facility for 30 days observation. A psychiatrist claimed he was suffering from general anxiety disorder that may have influenced his actions. The move suspends his trial for allegedly murdering his girlfriend at his Pretoria home last year. VOA's Anita Powell has more from Johannesburg.
Both sides in Oscar Pistorius's murder trial have spent weeks poring over every detail of what happened on February 14, 2013. They've spent hours going over the placement of bullet holes in the locked bathroom door through which the runner fired 4 shots, killing his girlfriend, model Reva Steenkamp. They have reached back into his life story, the amputation of his legs shortly after birth, his ascendance to being the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics in 2012, and that same year, meeting the woman he fell in love with and then killed. But the main factor, both sides agree, is something no one can see, the inner workings of his mind. What Pistorius was thinking that night is the critical difference between guilt and innocence in this murder trial. Pistorius argues his disability makes him feel vulnerable and constantly fearful. He says it was that fear that drove him to fire blindly at the locked bathroom door, where he thought an intruder was hiding. He says he did not mean to shoot Reva Steenkamp. The prosecution argues he meant to kill. Earlier in the week, a witness for the defense, a psychiatrist, testified that the athlete's anxiety disorder may have played a role in his actions. That claim prompted the prosecutor, Harry Nell, to essentially ask for a second opinion. On Wednesday, Judge Tokozile Masipa agreed, essentially ordering the court to get deeper into his mind.
The question is whether there was a reasonable possibility that a referral of the accused for observation in terms of Section 79 of Act 51 of 1977 would reveal inter alia that at the time the crime was committed, the accused suffered from a mental disorder which could have resulted in his not being criminally responsible for his act. Having regard to the facts of this case, I'm persuaded that the requirement of a reasonable possibility has been met.
Masipa will release a more detailed ruling on Tuesday, which will include logistical details. The move will then delay the trial for at least 1 month. Law professor James Grant of the University of the Witwatersrand says the psychiatrist's claim of possible mental illness forces the court to further examine the claim. But he says he does not think the psychiatric observation will find that Pistorius's mental illness is a contributor to his actions. He says a so-called insanity defense claim may actually help the prosecution.
The referral will, in my view, probably come to nothing, but I think it's going to force the defense to clarify what exactly their defense is. And that is very positive for the prosecution because it's then able to focus on disproving the defense. At the moment, the defense is effectively raising a moving target.
In the course of this trial, the runner has shown a range of extreme emotional reactions, sobbing and even vomiting into a bucket during graphic testimony. But Wednesday, he remained stoic. In the past 2 years, he has made a journey that no one expected, from the Olympics to the trial dock and now to a psychiatric ward. The next turn will be revealed when the trial resumes. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
VOA Africa Health Network, a multimedia network reaching 50 million Africans weekly. We bring you relevant, reliable health news and information. We ask you about the health problems most important to you and inform you about health problems impacting your community. VOA Africa Health Network. Visit our website at www.africahealthnetwork.com.